I want to start by saying I apologize to everyone who listened to the previous episode on the Phi Delta Thetas. I had failed to include the coach's interview in that original episode, and it took me many weeks to realize that. So I apologize if you listened to that and didn't get that. I've gone ahead and added it to the original episode, but this will be an addendum episode where I'm just talking to the coaches, Joe Hanauer and Jeff Beaumont. It's still a wonderful episode. I wish I had included it earlier, but here it is. Enjoy it.
The checkered flag is out. There's no yellow flag. It's a sprint for the finish for the 71st Little 500. Phi Delta Theta takes it. For the first time since 2016, a fraternity wins the Little 500.
Coach, you've done it. You've broken the streak. A fraternity is the winner of the 2022 Little 500. What's going through your mind?
It's incredible, man. Can't even put into words how long and hard that journey is. You know, this isn't an easy race to win. They put in the time, they put in the energy. These guys deserve it all. This is speechless right now. It's just unbelievable.
All right. I got Jeff Beaumont and Joe Hanauer today on the podcast. Hey, fellas, how you doing?
Good.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Yeah,
excellent.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, I would love to sort of get to know a little more about you, both you guys, and how you were involved in Little Five and when you started coaching and about this unique group and how Little Five played out for you guys this year.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Let's start with Joe. I think, Joe, you're older than Jeff, right?
I've got Jeff by a couple of years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, introduce yourself. Tell me when you rode Little Five, like how you got involved in Little Five, and so what was your Little Five experience?
Yeah, I joined right after my freshman year. So I watched the race. It was one of the ones in the rain, and we were in white. And I joined like right after that. My buddy Wes, you know, from high school, he was in Phi Delta with me. So I rode with him all summer, came back and did the 90 with the team. And that was like the big checkpoint for us back then. I rode for 2 years. We had some really deep teams. And then I finally got a chance to race my senior year in 2015. I think we got like 10th or something. So I moved away a little bit. We went out to California, my wife and I, and then I came back and started coaching and got involved probably like 3 or 4 years ago on the coaching side. Mm-hmm. And now I'm here.
Okay. So 2015 was your last race?
Mm-hmm. Last and only.
Okay. All right, Jeff, let's hear your story.
Yeah. My first year riding Little 500 was in 2017, and I made that decision after watching the 2016 race. We had two seniors and two fifth years, and like Ravelli and Ryan Romanesco, and going to the race as a sophomore and watching those guys race, I just kind of knew it was something that I definitely had to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Jeff, didn't you join when you were a junior? Or you started?
I joined as a junior. Yeah. So my first year of riding was my junior year.
And how many fifth years did you do?
I did one fifth year
on the honor off the books.
Well, it was a victory lap, that's for sure. Hey. But I run the 2018 and 2019 races.
Okay. And why did you both ride bikes in high school? Like, what led you to Little Five?
So I played baseball in high school, so I never ran more than like 90 feet, and I didn't hit the ball very often, so I wasn't running like at all. And then I didn't do any endurance stuff, and then I just like saw Little Five and I thought it was sweet, and I just wanted to compete. I mean, pretty simple, nothing too crazy.
So Joe, what did you see that made you like go all in?
I mean I just stood in the stands and I just watched how wild everyone got. I knew it was big. And I'd gotten to know some of the guys on the team a little bit that year. And I just thought they were cool guys and wanted to hang out with them. So I just started riding and, yeah. And then I, I just made it through that first summer. Like, that first summer was just such a, just like, what the heck is going on? Like, I just remember being like so out of sorts and just throwing this crazy, you know, mishmash of hand-me-downs together to get mm-hmm. ride. And then by the time I did the 90, probably like 3 months later, which I never like thought I would do, I was like, oh, maybe I can do this. And then I just kind of stuck around and hung around and had a lot of fun doing it.
Okay. And Jeff, what about you? Why did you decide to ride low five? Or what was that moment for you?
I'd always been really intrigued in cycling ever since all the Lance Armstrong Tour de France's. I had a July birthday, so growing up, I just remember as a kid just growing up and watching all those Tour de France's, and I just thought that was I want to say probably like third or fourth grade I did a biography report on Lance Armstrong, so that was kind of like my first introduction to cycling, and you know, probably not so good looking back, but growing up, I was a team sport athlete. Everything I just basketball, baseball, football year round. There were maybe a few years in there where I ran cross country too. And I even played golf in high school. So, you know, I was kind of all over the place. And I was like a 3 handicap the summer that I got my bike. You know, I just kind of gave that up and said I wanted to do a little five. And I jumped right in a little five. And like I said, just watching the 2016 race, I knew that it was something I was going to regret not being a part of if I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I have now given up cycling for golf. So I did the opposite.
Yeah.
Who are your guys' coaches and who are the mentors for Little Five for you guys when you rode?
So for me, I knew Brian. I mean, Brian Drummy was my coach the first probably 2 years. And then he had been kind of helping set up Chris West. And then Chris was in the pit for me on race day. So I'd say like Drummy and Joel were the ones who were always around, like from the get-go and always have been. And Chris really stepped in that last year and kind of like helped, you know, do a lot of what Drummy had been doing. Mm-hmm. And outside of that, I mean, I just think like the older guys on our team, like I could name for like 5 minutes, but like Brendan Wise was a captain that I always really looked up to. He just like always did things the right way and just had an incredible level of like integrity, which always really stuck with me and kind of like helped me understand like why it's so important to like keep passing down like these values that our team shares and has always shared. So those are just a few, but there's been like so many people that were a part of what made this year finally come, you know, and happen, that just like have been an awesome influence and have made this like the best thing I've ever been a part of.
Yeah. Well, what about you, Jeff? Was Chris West still coaching when you were riding?
Yeah, Chris West, my first year, he did the training for us. And then I know that for a lot of that year, like Joel McKay and a guy named Brett Lane, they really helped kind of like, you know, along the day in, day out stuff and just were there on like a weekly basis for us on the weekends and even in the spring and the rollers and stuff. And so the first year that I was a rider, Rob Lee was coaching in the pits. And I guess that I would note that was the year all four of us were rookies. And, you know, we had come off of a really long line of just like success. Like we had five consecutive podium teams. And then I think they went 10-8 after that. And then, so my first year back, we finished 23rd. And so, you know, we were kind of just keeping the program, you know, just like trying to hold the program together and start rebuilding. And that next year is when Joe stepped in and Joe was my coach for 2 years. Dang. And so yeah, we had Joe and we still had a lot of other guys involved, but you know, Joe really just grabbed it by the horns and took control and got us organized.
Joe, why did you do that? Why did you feel compelled to kind of fill those shoes?
Yeah, I was in California with Julia for a couple of years and then we moved back and I came to Bloomington really like as a stopping spot for like 2 months and I was going to move to Chicago. And I remember one day we just said like, why don't we just live here? it just like never crossed our mind. Like we always wanted to get back to Bloomington, but we just didn't think it happened so soon. So I was there and I just started, I've been riding out in, California with actually Chris Plifton a pretty good amount, more than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was still riding a bunch and I just kind of, I still was close with the team or close enough. And I just started riding and helping out. And I just like really enjoyed helping and giving back. You know, the program had done so much for me. I just felt like it was the absolute least I could do is to help and try to help someone out the way that, like, you know, my seniors had helped me out, or like the guys who had been recent graduates had helped me. So once I started doing it, I think by the time I got to the end of the first year, and I was just helping Rob out at that point, to see where the guys had started to where they had finished the end of the year, like seeing them like grow up and get better. And it was just extremely fulfilling. So once I kind of got a taste of it, I wanted to like, I just loved doing it. Just love it a ton. So
yeah.
And
what's the relationship between you two now? Like who does what for the team, and how do you guys break down those roles?
Jeff?
I'd say we both still kind of do a little bit of everything. I definitely do basically just all the training, and then Joe and I basically tag team the just organization, logistical stuff for stuff like the winter trip and just like team building, morale, which, you know, I think that he and I both agree that that's one of the biggest parts that we could actually even emphasize and anything Little 500 related. So, so I do the training and he and I both tag team the other stuff.
Okay. You just mentioned team building being such an important part. You know, I hear that so many times on these interviews, and you wouldn't think that team building would affect the outcome of a bike race. That's mostly endurance. But talk to me about team building and how do you guys facilitate that? And why is that important for the Fidel team?
So we've got so many alumni who were seriously involved in our teams and programs. And it's not like, you know, there has been down years, but for the most part, we've been a really competitive team for, you know, a while now. And there's a lot of guys who are still so passionate about it. So just keeping the alumni engaged and involved, like that's probably, I mean, I focus on that a big chunk of my time now, just because they do have a lot to add and they do come back. And even if it's once or twice a year, you know, Little Five and maybe one or two other weekends, just to like swap stories. And, you know, you can be around someone for like an hour or two and really like just soak up so much about what it was like and how things were done. And I think when, especially like we do Hilly 100, that's a big alumni weekend for us. For the guys on the team to be around someone who, you know, was doing all these great things, whether it was 3 years ago, 10 years ago, I think it just leaves a really good impact on these, on the riders. And it's just a super positive experience for everyone else involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I definitely add that, like, having a direct bridge to success and, you know, having guys that rode great races and guys that have won the race all come back and want to be a part of the program. Like Joe said, even if it's just for a weekend, and whether Hilly 100 or a Nashville 90, being a rider and seeing all those guys come back kind of enlightens the tradition that you're carrying on while you're doing it. And, you know, maybe you don't even entirely realize how big it is as a rider, but you know, like knowing what I know now, just teaching the guys those traditions and just alumni involvement, I'd say is like one of the most important things that like we've done and just getting the program to where it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys are like, I always remember when the alumni came back and hung out with us, I was like, you know, you think twice next time you like put your jersey on and you're going out for a ride and it's like, am I just going out for a cruise or am I getting better? And like, that's, if you have the guys around enough times in a year, you really keep that like energy going from the fall and building into the race.
Yeah. Joe, you mentioned a few minutes ago that you wanted to do things the right way when you started coaching or when you rode. Mm-hmm. What is the context around that? Doing things the right way. What's the right way to do it?
Yeah. So I've always believed, like, more than anything, like I want everyone who rides for our team you know, by the end of their time, I want them to be good guys first. And if they're fast riders, you know, that's really a bonus.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of believe that if you can stand, you know, on a one really strong principle, like it'll trickle down into everything else. And like, you know, Little Five is a huge part of everyone's lives, but there's also this massive part of life afterwards. You know, after you graduate, you get a job, you become a spouse, and become a parent someday. And like, learning these things through Little Five like applies so much past cycling. Like, that's really what I've tried to push on these guys. And because, you know, winning is awesome, but ultimately, like, I want these guys to come back around and be guys that I've, you know, we're proud of and are making good choices. And yeah, that's kind of what we believe in.
Now, as an 18-year-old in college, you might have other priorities. So that's not always the easiest thing to teach or easiest thing to convey to people, right? That being good guys first matters.
Yeah. So it doesn't happen overnight, but you know, by the time they get to the race and they see, oh, if I put in this hard work and I follow the training and I, you know, treat my teammates well, good things will come of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jeff, you mentioned you focused on the training aspect of it. Like, why does that interest you? And like, how did you learn the aspects of training?
The short answer would just be because I'm a nerd. I just love the data aspect and like, you know, just like experimenting around with different workouts and like, training types. And so I majored in physics, so it was really easy for me to dive into that side of things. And I think with like the amount of just like sensors and like power meters and stuff like that that people have access to, you know, it's just like something that you could almost just obsess over nonstop, and just out of just like enjoyment of it, and also just like just wanting to be faster and becoming the best bike race you can possibly become. So I had I really dove into the training like right when I started. You know, it's just I'm out digesting pretty much anything I can, whether it's a podcast or a YouTube video or an article online. And so, you know, I just kind of dive into training with all that stuff. And it's really been like a 5-year journey of just like constant learning about training. And just really trying to develop my own style of training and coaching and integrate it into Little 500.
Now, you had 4 riders this year that have complete respect for you guys, and believed in your training 100%.
Yeah.
That's Jeff. 100%.
Yeah.
and I love that Jeff loves it, because I'm just happy he is very into it. Cause I just like, he just sees it such a different way, and it's an awesome addition to our team. And I'm so grateful that Jeff has like done as well as he's done with it. And I'll make him blush on the podcast, but he does an awesome job. And I'm mm-hmm. glad that I don't even have to think about it. I just say, Jeff,
right?
It's all you,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, it is. It's not even a chore to me. It's just, I enjoy doing it. So
how has it evolved for you as a coach? And you got 3 seniors that can, or, you know, 4 guys that can handle a pretty big workload.
Yeah. So I guess it's kind of uncharted territory, because now you've had a few guys that have like been in your program and just like coaching for a few years. So I'm going into uncharted territory, and really just, it's, I guess I have a lot of freedom to, especially over the summer before people come back for school, just throw different stuff at the guys, see what works, see what doesn't. And not that training like will really change that much, but and there's also like the individual aspect of it too, where, you know, some guys respond better to some types of training than other guys do. So it's really just kind of being able to, you know, gauge your riders and like see their strengths and their weaknesses, and know what I need to do as a coach to, you know, make those guys better. And that might be different than what it takes for another guy to make them better. And I guess kind of all that was just pairing it up and, you know, being a coach to those guys and not as much of a friend, because we're still pretty close in age. So, you know, trying to balance that aspect of it too, which, you know, Joe's obviously been a phenomenal influence on me, helping me balance stuff like that. So
what's give me an example of a workout that you had the guys do and they're like, we're not doing that. That's too much. or that's crazy. Oh, are you sure about this?
I would say, I'd say that the ones that they like the least, and I think it's more of like the timing of everything too, is coming back from like Christmas break and, you know, they just did a ton of volume down on the winter trip and telling them to just, they're not allowed to go inside and just that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like it was 25 degrees outside and I'm still sending them out there for maybe 3x25 minutes, sweet spot, 3x30 minutes of what we call sweet spot. And I don't know that everybody has the same definition of it, but just not letting those guys drop their hours right after the winter trip and kind of battle it out in the weather out there. And I'd say the training was like maybe 75% of that. The other 25 was, there's a little bit of grit factor into going out and doing 3 or 4 hours outside in 25 degree weather. So that was the one that they hated.
They told me you made them do 3 Nashville 90s in February.
I did. And, yeah.
when it was in the 20s and you know, they're like, whoa. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I guess that I would say, my reason behind that is just, I kind of think that there's like 3 types of rides you can do. And one of them is a recovery ride, which I would say that everybody loves. The other one would be an endurance ride, which, you know, I would classify the Nashville 90 under that. And, the other one would just be like, you know, your high intensity or like intervals mm-hmm. training where, you know, you're like pushing the red zone and, really getting after it. So, yeah. And like, I think that everybody knows that you really can't go out and do high intensity all the time. So, you know, most of your rides are going to be endurance. So
yeah,
that's just kind of my reasoning behind that for them. And they hated it, but they put their nose to the grindstone and they did it. It's kind of nice to have that kind of a almost blind faith in me.
And there's some times where I saw Jeff, like I'd see these Strava rides afterwards and I just like the, you know, Jeff took over the training, not this year, but the year before, like took it over completely, and he would do some stuff and I would just be like, the first year I'm like, Jeff, what are you doing? Like, this is like, it was just so, you know, 180 different than what I had done and what I've been trained on. But then this year it's like, I truly, a lesson to me to just bite my tongue and just like, all right,
yeah,
run, Jeff.
Yeah, it's definitely been a change. I mean, I think that we carried like our traditional training like basically all the way through like the end of like 2019. And so I think that getting into like more of a data driven approach, and it just, I guess it's the physics side where you want to be able to measure progress and measure success, and you know, anything you can measure, you can use to make yourself better. So that's kind of where I stepped in, and that's just really been what I enjoy doing. And
yeah,
that my big contributions to the team.
You know, one of the most important parts of coaching is getting feedback.
Right? Exactly. Yeah.
So you write a workout, but unless you're getting feedback on how it went, you don't really know. Like, were the guys good at that for you?
Yeah, they were good at that. I definitely, it took a little bit of micromanaging, but you know, just I wanted them to be able to throw stuff back on me and, you know, just say, you know, you're not going to go out, not every workout's going to be your best workout ever. Cause you know, if that were the case, and I guess you'd be the best rider ever. But yeah, so just going out there and, you know, making sure that those guys are comfortable to tell me like, hey, like, yeah, like I didn't like the workout, or, you know, like the workout wasn't bad, but my legs just didn't feel great today. And you know, like opening up that two-sided conversation to where, you know, they're just not telling me what I want to hear, and being honest about where they're at, I think is like one of the things that really helped these guys all improve.
Yeah. You know, that's what Lance Armstrong contributes. His greatest strength was giving feedback to his coaches.
Yeah.
To bring Lance back up. So tell me about this group and what made them so unique for you guys. And on the caveat of that, like, when did you start to know they were going to be unique?
I think that more so than these guys had a crazy level of passion and respect for you know, entire program, the culture of our team, and the race itself. Like, generally, you just don't get that buy-in across the entire team. But these guys, you know, they truly believed in themselves and what they were doing. And that's, you know, I know that's why they won the race. I mean, there's a lot of things that these guys have done differently, but I think that they just, like, took this very, like, clear, singular mindset of this is how we're going to do it, and we're going to go win the race. And that's why they ended up getting it.
Yeah, I'd say definitely, like, their determination and just, like, confidence in themselves was a big motivator. I think that if the only other one that I would add would just be friendship and morale. I think that those guys wanted to win as bad for each other as they did for themselves. And I think that that's one of the things that really helped these guys hold it together and just lean on each other when adversity comes. And being able to do that is what made them a great team to me.
When did you guys know that they had potential to win the race? And not just be competitive, not just be a podium team, but they had clearly identified themselves as potential winners.
I think that there's, like, always this, like, a scale of, like, you know, teams that can win the race. Like, for some teams, there is a path to victory. You know, for us, I felt like not this year, but the year before, like 2020, when they were, or 2021, when they were on the lead, we made it to the lead lap at the end and we got crashed out. Like, Jeff and I were in the pit together and we just, like, looked at each other. And I think we both just were like, holy, like, you know, we can do this. And then unfortunately it doesn't go your way, but, you know, I really believed in it. I mean, you believe in it the entire time, but I saw a really clear path at that point. But this year, seeing Jim win, missing out, like, that's when it flipped for me for how do we win, to start thinking more about how do we defend against where I think we could lose. And we started building, I almost felt like I was building the strategy in reverse, or trying to think about it that way.
Yeah.
What about you, Jeff?
I would mimic Joe. I'd definitely say that the 2021 race was when, you know, we knew that they could win. And just, like, obviously, like, being the data guy, going into that race, you know, just, like, everything, ITTs and team pursuit happened so far away from the race that, you know, you just, in my mind, I just kind of threw all that stuff out because I had shifted training once the race was moved. So, you know, going into the race, I kind of knew that, you know, those guys were going to be up and up, and, you know, they were going to be hitting their peaks at a time, you know, like, weeks past, like, ITTs and team pursuits. And that's stuff that a lot of guys use as, like, their marker to gauge their progress and how they're doing and what kind of form they're going to go into the race with. And we went down at the crash on 146 after a 5-side lap the field. And, you know, we clawed our way back and made it onto the lead pack. And I think that we chased for maybe 16 laps, something around there. I know that it was greater than 15 laps. So, you know, being able to chase back on and just watching those guys bridge that gap back on. And that was kind of like the big dagger of my teams, is that, you know, like, once we lost contact with the pack, and granted, like, you know, that was, like, more after, like, lap 180, 185, you know, we weren't able to get back on, and watching those guys, you know, just get back on, like, it was nothing to them. You know, that was the big point where we realized that, you know, they were the real deal. And even before the race, you know, we were really confident and knew that, you know, if they rode the race that they were capable of riding, that, you know, they were capable of anything. So.
So how does the race strategy get developed for this year? Because Jimmy does really well in all the series events, and you guys do well in team pursuits.
Yeah.
Yes. I think that the strategy this year was really open-ended because, you know, Jimmy being the ITT winner, obviously, you know, he's just crazy talented. And I can't stress enough how awesome it is to have a guy like Jim on your team and have a guy like Jim to coach, because it really makes your job a little bit easier. But so after ITTs, pretty happy with how we did. And we had a great rider, Andrew Murray, miss ITTs as well. So We have him back for Team Pursuit, and he's a giant reason as to why we were able to go to the Team Pursuit finals. So knowing that we had the engines to stick with something from farther out, but also had Jimmy in a sprint and even Andrew in a sprint. Andrew's a great sprinter too. We kind of just looked to other teams that maybe didn't have the multidimensional characteristics that we do to kind of make their moves first and be able to follow it and be more selective about which moves we want to go with, which moves we think might stick. And I'd say that the race was really hard this year as far as like how it was ridden. I think you had four different times that you had teams off the front with anywhere of like an 8 to 18 second gap. So
yeah, we'll break that down here in a moment.
Yeah.
Before we talk about that, I want to hear what it was like to be a race favorite, like for Fidelts or one of the teams that people are running a strategy against and thinking about and watching the entire race.
I would say that this year it wasn't as, I could see why some years that could be scary. But this year it wasn't that scary. And, you know, it kind of adds to the pressure and it kind of adds to the realness of the race with those guys going in to race day, knowing that they're going to be a marked team and it's not going to be easy. And, you know, they're going to have to earn their burnouts and they're going to have to ride great the entire day because teams are going to really punish them if they mess up. So, but I also wouldn't have it any other way. I think that going out and being able to race as a race day favorite and have a really strong race, regardless of knowing that, you know, teams might be trying to counteract what you're doing, is a good feeling and just instills a lot of confidence as a coach and as a rider.
Mm-hmm. Joe, tell me what race day looks like. Like Jeff's on the track, you're behind a fence. You got all these alumni back there and everyone's got an idea and opinion, right? how do you guys set boundaries and decide who gets the final decision?
Boundaries are, I mean, with the guys on the fence, they were helpful. Like they did, like everyone's got a job in the sense of spotting, counting, you know, doing something that's helping the team. And ultimately, like those guys trust Jeff and I with what decisions we make. There's no overruling or overriding. No one comes in and says, I've got the idea. It's really just like Jeff and I making decisions for how this is going to get done. And like, I did it once on my own and I bounced ideas off some people. And that was kind of, you know, it was challenging. It's hard to do on your own. And then, so when I had Jeff with me in 21, you know, we were just like, you know, it in one sense, it's like, I was a little kind of nervous going into it. Cause it's like two guys having ideas. How do you make a decision when it counts? But the 21 race just went like so well. And Jeff and I just share a very like clear, like same version of like philosophy of the race and like how we think the race happens and how to respond and react and like just how you approach it. So it's never really been like a difficult challenge. We just like work together, and because we share the same beliefs, making decisions is ultimately, you know, pretty easy for us.
Gotcha. So let's talk a little about the race and how the race flowed. There's some big events in the race, like Jeff, you alluded to, a bunch of teams got up the track. There's right. A crash.
Yeah, so I'd say that the race flowed pretty well in our favor until we were involved in a crash around 120. And so leading up to that, we'd gone through the entire rotation. And I think that the second time through the rotation is kind of when Faisai had gone off the front and we were able to bridge that and look back. There was Sigep and Black Eagles were with us in Faisai, and we just decided to roll it through. And, you know, at that point of the race, we really liked the position we were in, and not that we really expected that move to stick or lap the field or stay off the front for the rest of the race, but a lot of teams that weren't in that move really had to chase that down. And I think that obviously what Faisai did last year was kind of an alarm bell for a lot of teams, not mm-hmm. letting that go. And then having Blackie Bowles and Sigep and us all with them probably added to that. So, you know, we go through that, and I know that that move gets brought back, and one of our riders goes down in turn four, and that's kind of, you know, the moment where, you know, did the race just shatter? You know, what do you do from here? So our guy ends up in the med tent, and we didn't know if we were going to get him back. I know that his finger mm-hmm. was just gushing blood, and he lost a fingernail. And I want to say that Joe just looked at me and was like, you know, Mitch is done for the day. You know, we're not getting him back. So, and, you know, even if it wasn't true, it was a good assumption to operate under, because I needed to start making decisions based on that being true. And, you know, so luckily we get him back. And so right after that crash,
I couldn't believe Mitch came back. I just like, yeah, he came running. Right. I could not believe that we got him back.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like that, oh crap moment. And so somehow we were 20 seconds down, and Andrew shut that gap down in, I think, six laps. And I don't know that the pace was too hot on the front, but it could have been a lot harder to get back to the front of the race. And so that was kind of like our little bit of luck that the race threw us that day. I think mm-hmm. that you always need some luck to win the race. And Andrew being able to get back to the front of the race in six laps, especially operating, you know, under the pretense that we might only have three riders for the rest of the race, was kind of the big weight lifted off our shoulders, where we're like, okay, so we still got a chance. And then I'd say, like, the rest of the race, it got pretty crazy with, I think that Kai Alpha went off the front. I know Cutters and Beta Sig were off the front, and then Faisai was off the front again. And I think that one of the coolest things really crazy. I saw this race. Yeah. Oh, it was very crazy. And I think that the coolest thing that I've seen happen this race, just watching just the main pack cohesively chase down all those moves in a really organized fashion. Like, I would say that it's rare to see that happen as well as it did, and how fast they shut the gaps down. And like one time at a race, let alone to happen four different times, was, I think, pretty unique. And so, you know, that last one when Faisai was off the front didn't get brought back until around like 192, 193, 194, mm-hmm. sometime around there. And
when did you want to put Jimmy on the bike, and when did he actually have to get on? Because Faisai was up the track, and that's the race if you don't really commit to it.
We put Jimmy on at 187, and Jimmy, when I asked him when he wanted to go on, he was 190, and I think that his legs were starting to cramp up a little bit. I think
we asked him, said, Jim, you got 12 in you? And he just looks at us like, just like, man, I hope you do.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, we had a scary moment. And, you know, I'd say that we had Andrew on the bike. We probably got him on around like 165, 170. And I think his last set was 18 laps, and we didn't anticipate on it being 18 laps, especially at that point in the race. And just the way it shaked out, he ended up staying on the bike until 187, and we didn't end up putting our other rider on. So that was kind of the big decision that we had to make, is, you know, are we going to try to get Mitch on the bike before Jimmy goes on? So three laps onto his last set, you know, at the end of the race, three laps in, he kind of looks at me and points to his hamstring, just to, you know, kind of signal that he's cramping. And it's just, you know, so I'm thinking what we need to do. And, you know, I just shake my head and tell him, you've got to do it. And so for him to tough that out, I was really proud of him.
Yeah, he makes a wonderful tactical decision when Faisai exchanges. Like, he accelerates and closes it down right then.
Right. Yeah, and that was kind of one of the things that we coached him on, is this, you know, that late in the race, you know, one of the things that's going to help you out and kind of hurting the other teams is just punishing exchanges. And, you know, that's really where the gaps can grow, where the gaps can come down. And he did a really good job at that.
And then once they catch Faisai, you know, a lot of things regroup. Jimmy probably needs time for his hamstrings to recover.
Yeah.
And like, what are you guys thinking? Like, you made it to the end. The year before that, there was a crash at the finish. Did he coach him through strategy of where to ride, or does he instinctively already have that down?
Yeah, we did go through strategy of where to ride. And I'd say that kind of what changed that strategy for us was probably last year's race, where the corners were pretty dicey. And going into this year's race, with the track had a different surface. We didn't really know what the track was going to be like on race day. So we had two different scenarios depending on what the track condition was like. And Jimmy got exactly where we told him to get to, and he did exactly what we told him to do. And he executed those last five laps textbook. I couldn't have asked him to execute it any better.
Talk me through the last lap, you guys, where you see the white flag. And like, what's the excitement level there? Jimmy's at the front. There was just a crash that you guys did not go down in.
Right. Yeah, and at the time, I don't know if Joe saw the crash. I know that I definitely didn't see the crash. You know, we just knew that there weren't as many teams coming across the line for the last lap. So, you know, we see four guys go across the line, and, you know, really, we just told Jimmy, you know, you need to be the first guy into turn one, and if you can do that, you're going to bring it home. So, you know, we see him first in the turn one, and, you know, Sig Epps making a really good run at it. Jet Black makes up a ton of ground, and you know, just watching him come around, we see him going to turn three in the lead, and then coming out of turn four, you know, they're all hauling, and kind of, you know, coming out of turn four, you just kind of knew that he was going to bring it home. So it was pretty exciting.
You think
Joe may or may not have had his phone out recording.
I got a great video. Yeah, I felt when we got Jim on the bike with 12 to go, I just felt so calm. I mean, honestly, like getting Andrew on and him getting through and riding a great set and getting it to Jim, like we just wanted Jim in the end. And so when Jim got on, like maybe this is just blind faith or confidence, but I just felt like so good. It's like, and watching him ride the missing out and just ride so smart all day. He just had a lot of natural, like, you know, skill of knowing where to be. And I mean, all these guys just gave us so much confidence. Like, it made it awesome for us.
So the guys win. Like, tell me about all the alumni, the release of emotion, because it had been many years since $5 won the race, and you guys have had a lot of good teams since then.
Felt like a bomb went off my chest. I was just like, aww, so happy. Like, I just couldn't believe it. I mean, you do and you don't. And I think all of us are still just like kind of floating. You know, it had been building up, and there all those guys who are on the podium teams were there, and just so, you know, it was like a win for everyone. I mean, we all went back to the bike room afterwards and hung out for a bit, and just to see everyone there, it's like everyone just kind of looks around and everyone just kind of knows, you know, what it's cost and what we've been wanting. And to see, you know, I've been involved in this program for 10 years, to see all of it come to fruition in a matter of, you know, you're unsure at 198, and then what, 2 minutes later your team gets the win. It's like you can't describe it.
yeah, it was it's got to be one of the best feelings in the world, just to, you know, see Jimmy come across the line, and, you know, just erupt, just, you know, just everything just like erupted. And, you know, you can just see it in everybody's eyes, just like how much work and history there was that went into that win. And it had been 21 years for us. And, you know, we'd almost had like a podium curse. And, you know, I look back at my years, I'm like, man, I would have loved a podium, but, you know, I'm sure the podium five times in a row, like, really eats away at you. And, you know, having all those guys there behind the pits, and, you know, just like witness us finally getting the win, getting that next win, it meant a lot. And I'd say that that's kind of what made this race so special, is all the alumni we had come back. It was the 82 team, which was our first team to ever win. It was their 40th year anniversary for this race, and all four of those came back.
Wow.
So,
and it was the 25th anniversary of the second win, Joel's team.
Yeah.
So that was really cool for all of us.
Yeah. Those guys were back also.
Yeah.
Well, and then it would have been it would have been the 20th anniversary for the one guys too, right?
The but 21 they, or the 12.
Yeah, I think that those both would have fallen on the 21 race, but no fans. So I think that, you know,
oh, sure.
Separated that as our race this year that we have fans for. So yeah, just kind of like significant numbers for all three winning teams. And
mm-hmm.
to have all those guys back and get the job done is just, you can't even put it into words.
Yeah. Well, what's the future of Fight Out Cycling? Like, where do we go from here?
Jeff?
Yeah, it's always just recruiting. And I'd say that, you know, we're just like recruiting harder more than we ever could right now.
How do you recruit college kids coming in?
Well, you show them how much fun it is. That's the biggest thing is you just got to show them how much fun it is. And, you know, they're going to have to put a lot into it, but they're going to get a lot out of it. And, you know, you have to really be able to sell people on that and, you know, be able to sell them that it's going to be fun along the way. And you're going to make a lot of great memories that you're never going to forget. So, you know, if you can convince people of that, then I think that you can really get guys to buy in.
Hmm. Yeah. It's, you really have to convince them that where you start is not where you're going to end.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
There's the training kicks in, the passion, friendships, the morale, all that.
Yeah. And having just like seeing all these guys like go through and be great, you know, great friends at the end of this across the board. And right. Does make it easy. Like that was for me, like, you know, that's what always interested me. And we're lucky that, you know, we've had so many solid guys around.
They really seem like best friends.
They are.
They
most definitely are. Yeah. And yeah. I think that that's like one of the best things that you can have in a team. And it's a little bit, I wouldn't say it's harder as a Greek team, but you know, you might have guys across multiple years that, you know, have different friend groups within the fraternity. So, and that was the case with my teams. I was the oldest one on the team. And then we had one guy that was a year below me. And then we had two guys that were a year below him. So, you know, it's kind of bridging that gap. And, you know, are the guys on your team the guys that you're still hanging out with on the weekend? And I think that if that answer is yes, then you're going to be able to do something really special in regards to this race.
That's for sure. Well, I know it's a lot of work what you guys do, and you don't always get to win. So it's not always like the best day of your life kind of thing. But it's still worth it, you know? I know you guys know that.
And, yeah.
It definitely is.
I want to thank you guys for taking it serious and making Little Five like special and competitive. And it raises everyone's training and the level of the race, it raises it up. So thank you both for doing that.
Well, thank you. Happy to help, and we respect the heck out of you guys and what you guys do, and you know, all boats rise. So
that's right.
we're just happy to be around and get to hang with the boys and ride a couple bikes here and there.
Yeah.
Well, and thanks for your time. Thanks for your time, fellas.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jim.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us on, Jim.
Anything else? Any closing words?
I would like to thank all the alumni who have helped us get to where we are. And give another shout out to the team because I love them and if they're still listening, I hope you know how proud of them I am. So
yeah,
that's all I got.
And only last thing I'd add is just give kudos to Hank Dunk and the race director. He's done a great job bringing this race back.
Yep.
Well said. All right. Thank you both, and I'll see you guys in Bloomington soon. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah,
all right. Thanks, take
Jim.
Care.
Thanks. All right.
See you.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks again for listening. You can really hear and you can really tell that those two guys really care about the university, about Little 500, and about the riders that they get to impact. So thank you to Jeff and Joe, and thanks to everyone who's still cheering for Little 5, and let's keep this wonderful race going.